On the Sunday after Easter in the year 1993, something happened to me that forever changed the way I preached. I was new to preaching at the time. In fact, I was still 2 months from my seminary graduation, and I was preaching what in Presbyterian parlance we call a neutral pulpit sermon. This is part of the job application process. If a pastor nominating committee likes a particular candidate, they will invite her or him to preach in a neutral pulpit, meaning that the candidate gets to preach at a church that is not the candidate's own church, nor the church that has an open position. So I was applying for my first job, a job I ended up getting. And the congregation I eventually served was in a tiny town called Gonzales, and I was preaching at a church in nearby Salinas. And the sermon was on the story of the Apostle Thomas and his doubts, and I don't honestly remember much about the sermon, except that when the worship service was over, an elderly gentleman sought me out and shook my hand and said, "Thank you for not using a sports metaphor in your sermon." Most young men who are preachers, this guy told me, most young men who are preachers use sports metaphors for everything in their sermons because they think everyone likes sports. But we don't all like sports. I don't like sports, never have, he said. So in the years since then, I've done my very best to avoid sports metaphors in the pulpit, which usually hasn't been that difficult. I'll tell you something. When I was in the eighth grade, I decided to try out for Little League. I wanted to play on the team sponsored by the Mendocino Ice Cream Company, which all of the popular boys in my middle school played on. And I hoped that by playing on the ice cream company team, I would break into the ranks of the perpetually cool. Now, until then, I had never played even 1 minute of organized sports. I was on an organized sports team, but I didn't get to play. I sat on the bench the whole time. And at the tryouts for that Little League team, I was awful. And I knew I was awful. And after my turn at the plate, spinning and flailing the bat, I sat down next to my mom in the bleachers. And I was dejected and deflated. And she put her arm around me and said, "That's okay, Ben. You play the French horn." And that has pretty much been my relationship to organized team sports ever since. That isn't to say that it's always easy to avoid sports metaphors. This year, for example, it's sort of a challenge because the Sharks are finally in the Stanley Cup Finals, and the Warriors' dream season is kind of on the line, and the Giants are in first place. But my restraint has paid some dividends. No one in any of the three congregations that I've served ever has heard it said that Jesus is our quarterback in the game of life. I think there's some value in that. We have never sung the song, "High Five the Lord," which actually is a song, or maybe more of a song, through which once I had to suffer at a Presbytery worship service meant to instruct us on how to lead churches that would be more relevant. So, dearly beloved, 3 cheers for sermons without sports metaphors. Now, if you'll indulge me, I want to use a sports metaphor. And I apologize for this, but at the very least, this isn't a sports metaphor that involves winning or being a great athlete. And really, I think what I'm using is more of a simile than a metaphor. So perhaps my long streak of not using sports metaphors is still uninterrupted, at least technically. Either way, years ago, youth sports became a part of my life. It started out slowly with one child playing very relaxed soccer at the local YMCA in San Jose. Now, these years later, I spend a lot of time at the ice rink, the soccer field, and the basketball court. The level of competition ranges from not at all to kind of crazy. But at every level of competition, there is something wonderful that happens. When a player gets hurt, all of the other kids on both teams drop to a knee. The competition stops, and they all stay that way until the child who was hurt is off the field and safe. I don't know when that stops happening with youth sports, but I wish it happened at every level. I wish it happened at the pros. I wish that every time a soccer player twisted her knee or a baseball player got hit with a pitch, I wish that the whole game would stop and all of the athletes would go to a knee out of respect and concern for their fellow player. It would be a reminder to all of us that compassion and human connectedness are more important than competition and winning. Now here's the metaphor, or at least the simile. I think the practice of taking a knee in youth sports is a good way to understand what is happening in this morning's lesson from Luke. In the story, someone is sick and near death. The person in question is a slave in the house of a local Roman military leader, and the whole community more or less takes a knee. They set aside differences, they come together, and they try to save this man's life. It was a remarkable act of cooperation. In many ways, the book of Luke can be read as a series of stories that tell of Jesus' conflicts with the Romans and with the Pharisees, who were the lay religious leaders of the local communities. The book of Luke was written at a time when the early church was breaking away from mainstream Judaism, which was a painful split for the Jewish folks who made up most of the Christian community and for their relatives and friends and community members who remained within mainstream Judaism. It was also a time when the Roman persecutions of Christians were starting to get serious. So when Luke wrote his gospel, these two conflicts are found all over the place. The stories alternate between stories about Jesus in conflict with Rome and the empire, and Jesus in conflict with the Jewish leaders. And we know from history that the Jewish leaders didn't like the Christians, and they certainly didn't like the Romans, and the Romans didn't like the Christians, and they looked down on the Jews as being sort of backwards and unsophisticated. Then there is this story, a story about the three groups of people not ordinarily inclined to like each other, the Romans, the Pharisees, and Jesus and his disciples who represent the Christian church later on. Here's a story where all these three groups set aside their animosity in the interest of helping a young man who was sick and in need of healing. Because he was sick, they all took a knee. The Pharisees let Jesus know that this Roman really wasn't so bad after all. And the Roman was willing to respect Jesus even though he was a bit of a rabble-rouser. And Jesus didn't use this as an opportunity to say something that will make Romans and the empire look evil or the Pharisees look petty. Everyone just gets along for the sake of the servant who needs to be healed. And I think humans are at our best when we are like the folks in this morning's lesson from Luke, and we're willing to take a knee out of concern and respect for those who are vulnerable and need healing. For example, after the attacks of 9/11, the world community took a knee for the United States, and it was beautiful. Of course, we squandered that goodwill, but for a moment, it was inspiring. Similarly, when Malala Yousafzai was shot by members of the Taliban because she was an advocate for girls' education, tens of thousands of Muslims in Pakistan took a knee. They lit candles in her honor, and people all over the world joined them. We all took a knee. And we all took a knee when we saw images of a drowned toddler who was a refugee from Syria washed up on a Turkish beach. We took a knee after the Charlie Hebdo attacks in Paris. Humans have shown themselves capable of taking a knee from time to time. And sometimes I wonder what it might look like if we took a knee more often. What if we took a knee out of concern for civilians killed by the bombs dropped from American drones? What if officials in Michigan had taken a knee sooner after hearing that lead-contaminated water in the city of Flint was poisoning babies? What if we really and truly took a knee in response to global warming? What if we took a knee every time we heard of an underfunded, understaffed, undersupplied, poorly prepared school in a community of color that was failing its students for lack of resources? What if we took a knee every time we came across one of the shanty towns that are taking root in our city because of the homeless crisis? What if we took a knee every time we heard of an instance of domestic abuse? What if we took a knee when someone's life is ruined by addiction? But too often we don't take a knee. When civilians are killed by American bombs, we just send in more drones. When commercial practices or governmental policies end up poisoning our kids or destroying our watersheds and streams around the world, we shrug. We have to do what's best for the shareholders. We have to save taxpayers' money. Few of us truly take a knee in response to global warming. We still drive our cars. We still buy stuff packaged in plastic and shipped in from the farthest parts of the earth. We accept failing schools and unprepared students and homelessness. We turn a blind eye to domestic abuse. And our collective response to the epidemic of drug addiction is to throw more people in jail. It's all part of life, we say. We keep on running, kicking the ball, scoring goals or not, winning or losing. The game goes on. We don't notice. The story of Jesus healing the centurion's servant challenges us to decide if we will take a knee. If like Jesus and the Roman and the Pharisee, we will set aside our animosities, our competitions, our games for the sake of those who need healing, who need us to stop, to have compassion, to have respect for a shared humanity. So will you take a knee? Will you value the life of your fellow human more than you value winning the game? Dearly beloved, every day let us take time to remember what is important in life and who is important in life. Let us remember that human life is more important than winning a game whose victories are transitory anyway. Let us remember that being a good and faithful person is better and more important than making money or winning or coming in first. And let us remember that if Jesus, the Roman, and the Pharisee could all set aside their animosity, if they could take a knee for the sake of a Roman slave, the Roman slave, then surely we can take a knee as well. We can set aside any animosity for the well-being of God's children. We can do it. And dearly beloved, well, we should. Amen.